Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, going to join me as always. We will break down a couple blowouts. Florida's rout of Arkansas in the O'Connell Center last weekend, and then the Gators getting blown out on the road at Tennessee, where Florida just kind of, you know, didn't match Tennessee's physicality or energy, in addition to just the way that Tennessee is really good and executes their stuff, and Dalton Connect is awesome. You know, that's, I think, the biggest and most disturbing thing about that loss is just that, yet again, Florida kind of failed on three fronts. They didn't match energy, they didn't match physicality, and they seemed to not have a particularly good plan of attack. Whereas, like, if you watch Tennessee, it was like ball reversal, flex cut. It was like screen, ball reversal, flex cut, mid-range jumper, basket. I mean, like, I think I forgot pass in there. But, like, just so, so good. So, that's disappointing as we break down two blowouts. And I think our listeners, like, based on overwhelming DMs, Eric is blessed to not have to deal with the FBH account. but, like, based on overwhelming DMs, we'll start with Tennessee. I don't want to forget that Florida played a very good game against Arkansas. So we are going to talk about the Arkansas game. But we'll start with Tennessee and kind of the overarching point I made, Eric, which is that once again against a good Hall of Fame caliber coach, Florida seemed to be the less prepared team. And then once again on the road, Florida seemed to be like the less physical, less energetic team.
Yeah, like we've just not really seen Florida employ many different styles. And when you come to a game like Tennessee and you're playing such an elite defense, you'd maybe have liked to seen some more noticeable adjustments than...
I don't know if we have Eric or not. I think we're... I can't hear anything. So, oh, now I can hear.
Hey, do you got me now? Hello, hello.
We got you?
I'm hearing you. Do you got me?
Yeah, I got you now. Sorry about that.
Hey, sorry, everyone. Yeah, I think that when you see a game like Tennessee, where you're going into a game that's one of the best defenses in the country, I mean, I think they're third in KenPom. If you wanted to make an argument that they're the best, you certainly could. I think you would have liked to have seen maybe the Gators, who have not been particularly successful offensively, come in with maybe somewhat of a different game plan. And just once again, we saw Duckins on the block while there was high ball screens and then a reversal into a side ball screen. And it's all fine. But again, you're going against Tennessee, who threw in a bunch of new sets to get Duckins for Jonas Adu and threw in a bunch of this high post split stuff to catch the Gators on curls when Florida's again, like we saw in Ole Miss, once suddenly you've got these centers for Florida that are trailing pin downs that they're not used to. Like you just saw, Tennessee come in with a plan that was very bespoke to this matchup against the Gators. And then we just haven't seen the Gators do anything different. And if you've got, if you're a team that's like very, very successful, you're able to just impose your will no matter what style you're playing. And you say, hey, we're coming in to set the tone. Florida just hasn't shown the ability to do that this season. And I think that was concerning. I thought it was concerning once again, like the Gators gave up two career nights, one to Dalton Connect, one to Jonas Adu. Like Adu's had bigger point performances, but when you look at how he scored it was a lot of just like run out, leak outs in transition and offensive rebound putbacks. Whereas like this time it was like sat on the block, Micah Hanlockton's guarding him, And then it was, oh, I'm just going to drop step around him with my head underneath the rim, catch the ball and turn and lay it in. And Florida's level of physicality in the front court is just grossly inadequate. To be honest, like with the Dalton Knecht situation, he was spectacular and he hit some ridiculous shots. And I do think there's something to be said about Florida's roster construction, that they don't have any big wings. Once again, that could maybe slow down a guy like that. But I do look at if Florida has wings on their roster and not a bunch of guards and a bunch of centers, maybe someone slows them down to 32 points or 33 points. You could look at there being holes in Florida's roster with that. I do think it was just a great game. I'm pretty concerned by Jonas Adu looking like Hakeem against a Florida front court that's getting just absolutely bullied from Quinnipiac to Loyola, Maryland to Tennessee. Doesn't matter. 6'6" to 7 foot. Doesn't matter. Everyone's just pushing Florida's front court around. And it's one of those things that you look at the heights when the starting lineups are picked and you're like, oh, Florida's got a lot of size. Well, it's not very functional when any front court player can bury Florida centers under the rim. So, yeah, those would be my concerns coming from this one.
Yeah, just the fourth time this season Jonas Adu has had more than 10 points against a Power 6 opponent. And then obviously much more than that against the Gators. To go with the non-rebounds, to go with the two block shots. And I think some of Florida's blocks end up being like guards forcing the issue when they get downhill, because Florida doesn't really have a natural post scorer outside of Alex Condon and Tyrese Samuel. So when Micah Hanlockton's on the floor in the post, they're not going to – I think Florida's guards sort of force things, or at least defenses know where offense is coming from. The other point I wanted to make was that, it's just the second time this season where we've seen Florida really bothered by ball pressure and unable to sort of initiate their offense. The other time being the East Carolina game, I think maybe the most obvious example, Eric, but like Florida unable to initiate offense until very late in the shot clock. And I think there really are two problems for that. One is obviously disruptive ball pressure. Tennessee's great at that. Second is Florida's screens are just not that good. And I will compare and contrast Florida's screening in the Arkansas game to like their screening in Tennessee. But like Micah Hanlockton, not a good screener. None of Florida's guards, with the exception of maybe Denzel Aberdeen, are particularly good screeners. I think Tyrese Samuel can be a good screener, but isn't as consistent as maybe I'd like him to be in that capacity. Alex Condon still learning to do it, but will be good. Certainly was Florida's most physical or willing to be physical big against Tennessee. So I think when you look at those sorts of problems, you get Florida in late shot clocks. And then in the first half, as you said, like the actions are fine enough, but there's not any sort of wrinkles. Like there's not false actions to occupy Tennessee defenders and help them attack mismatches. Like just nothing like particularly complicated from the Gators. So when you couple, sort of bad screening with what they're actually running with a lack of complexity, it becomes pretty easy to guard Florida.
Well, yeah, Florida's built to play bully ball, but they don't have bullies. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was, and that's why we kept talking in the non-conference.
Much better said than what I just rambled about.
Well, like we talked about it in non-conference play when Florida continually overwhelmed every bye game opponent. And it was just because, again, they were playing this style where they're constantly ducking in. They're, of course, hammering the offensive glass. And then it's like suddenly you play Tennessee. And I mean, again, not that anyone should have expected offensive output from Micah Hanlockton because he didn't show any at Marshall. But like that's a guy who's essentially been at 0 points the last few games. He's been able to get a couple in garbage time the last couple ones. And it's, maybe I don't know if it's much of a conversation, whatever, but like that's what he's getting in second half is garbage time, because it's pretty clear that Alex Condon is the more trusted center. And again, you mentioned Alex Condon is you kind of reluctantly had to admit that Alex Condon was Florida's best post player. Like his numbers are not very good. I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's saying something. of course, Tyree Samuel being a little more of a face-up guy than a put back to the basket kind of player you throw to on the block. And of course, Tyree Samuel is having a bit of a slow couple weeks here. So yeah, it's like Florida's whole style from what we saw from the opening game was like, yeah, they're going to play the two bigs. They're going to play Duckin and these Duckin ball screens. And there was times it certainly worked and they were getting to those empty side ball screens and it was turning into lobs. And so there's still times where Zion Pullen gets right to the rim or Walter Clayton still had a couple against Tennessee. It's not all wrong, but it's like Florida's ethos that they built with the team that they played was like some big scoring guards. And then a bunch of tall post players and, the guards have been pretty good, largely. Like Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen have been good. Everyone around them have been okay. But you know, overall, that group's been pretty good. But it's just like it's just this style of play is just that does not seem conducive to winning. And like once again, it was like Florida. Well, on this was almost like almost cruel. But of course, another talking point for Florida all season long has been their poor free throw shooting. And you see this game, they go 21 for 25 from the free throw line, 84%. Tennessee is a very good defensive rebounding team. The Gators get 19 offensive rebounds, 39% offensive rebound rate. So very good. Like if you said Florida is going to hit 21 of 25 free throws and they get 19 offensive rebounds, people are probably like, wow, Florida probably won this game or at least kept it close. No, like this is another one like Ole Miss where like we were looking at some of the stats. We're like, oh, like looking at a couple of these indicators, you would have think Florida won the game, not got hammered. So again, it's just like you just have to wonder if the style of play that Florida's playing is conducive to winning. And again, we just haven't seen the ability for Florida to play different styles or do anything different. And again, when you look at this roster, it's like, well, Florida doesn't really have any true fours outside of like, I would say Thomas Houck. And they don't really have wings to slow down Dalta Connect. So like to some extent, it's like you can't really change the look of this team drastically unless it's more Thomas yep. Houck or you go really small with Roel Richard at the four. But like it's one of those things that like the offensive rebounding category belongs to the Gators. They are still like, again, I wrote an article talking about how when you look at most of Florida's big offensive rebounding performances, they came against poor defensive rebounding teams. Well, Tennessee is a good defensive rebounding team. Florida still got a ton of offensive rebounds. But like Florida's not winning the battle in the paint offensively. They're missing a lot at the rim. They don't have post players that can score at the rim. And defensively, they're getting hammered at the rim because people are setting out Jonas Adu to go and post up a bunch of time. Like guys that are not post up players are able to post up and score on the Gators. So it's like, again, it's like Florida like has size, but they're getting killed in both paints. They have length, but they're getting killed inside on like, it's just like, yeah, the identity of the team has just shown to work in against non-conference by games, it is not shown the ability to work against SEC teams or some of the better teams on Florida's schedule, even going back to the non-conference.
Yeah, great points. I mean, look, Florida had 20 points off Tennessee turnovers. Tennessee only had 7. Florida had 22 fast break points. Tennessee had 8. I mean, these are things that if you had told me that these were numbers and then said, oh, by the way, Tennessee is going to win by 19 points. I'd have been like, wow, that's pretty frightening. And it is pretty frightening. Obviously, Edge Jarvis, a guy who's 6'8", moves laterally pretty well, used to defend everybody's best 3 or 4 for Yale last year. It's how he became an all-Ivy League player. I mean, you know, his absence, does it help on Dalton Connect? Of course it does. I mean, Mike White threw Jabri Abdur-Rahim at him. He foolishly put Blue Kane on him for a couple possessions. That wasn't a great idea. But, like, Mike White was trying things because he had different pieces on his roster, right? Like, he had guys he could be like, you know what? I think maybe Silas Denari is not a great idea. Hey, RJ Melendez, you're 6'7 and super long. Like, get out there and get after him. And it was funny because you watched – then I watched college basketball, what used to be College Basketball Tonight, you know, on ESPN. Like, they're going through highlights and they're showing – some of these makes, and they're like, look at this defense by Riley Kugel. Like, it's textbook good on at least three different Connect jumpers. And, like, he's 6'5", and Dalton Connect is 6'6", and his arms and release point are not things that Riley Kugel can necessarily defend. I mean, there was one and one call, which was patently absurd, where Kugel was vertical and like just the follow through on the hand happened to like make contact with Kugel. And, you know, everybody went nuts about it. And Jimmy Dykes, like, to his credit, was just like, I'm not really sure what Riley Kugel can do there. But that one phrase kind of sums up where Florida's roster was at in trying to defend a player like that. But it's not just these types of players. As you mentioned, there's Jonas Adoo. There's the 33 burger from Doug McDaniel. I mean, like, you know, career nights against the Florida defense have happened too often against outstanding competition. And, you know, I think some of that is just Florida's reluctancy or, you know, maybe inability to adapt to their personnel that they do have.
Yeah, and it's like, we can obviously talk roster building. That seems like that's, we need to talk, like, that's more of an off-season thing. I appreciate you maybe giving some grace. Like, EJ Jarvis is getting killed by Dalton Connect out there. I'm not even saying that to you necessarily, but like, there are some people out there that are like, maybe that are looking for reasons for optimism. And it's like, well, you know, like, if, because, you know, I did just say, well, Florida's going to have a four on the roster. I would call EJ Jarvis a four. So that's right. Totally, you know, that's
that was the only point I was making.
Totally. I think he'd have value. Like, if, but I did see people out there being like, well, like, you know, EJ Jarvis was like 6'7" and Dalton Connect is like 6'7". Like, there's a guy, like, Dalton Connect's going for 50. And again, Jarvis is a good defender. He's not a go put him on the perimeter guy.
No.
Defender. So again, it's like, I would have, there's times like when we're talking about the roster construction, hey, I said that I thought EJ Jarvis was going to start, and it wasn't because I thought he was one of Florida's five best players. I thought he would have been good as someone who could provide a quick ball reversal into a wide pin down and at least be able to put the ball on the deck one or two times before swinging it and showing some ability to shoot. Again, I think that those numbers are pretty dubious, but you know, he has
hit.
Threes have gone through the net for him occasionally. So like, it would have helped. Like, if you're looking at a 19 point, like, you're looking at these blowout losses to SEC teams and saying like, man, if only we had EJ Jarvis, like that is a sad state of affairs.
I think the point like is, for me, it was just like, so Todd Golden's roster means that Riley Kugel is all he can really throw at Dalton Connect. Like, you can't show him different looks. Cause remember, like, the reason that Tennessee escaped Athens with a win was Dalton Connect. It's not like what Mike White was doing was working, really. It's just that, hey, I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff at him because I can at least do that with the roster I have. That's the only point I'm making. It's not that, you know, necessarily that works. I do think Edge Jarvis's main benefit to Florida was going to be post defense and like his ability to kind of defensive rebound. Like, do I think Florida can probably, and again, he's undersized in there, but in terms of like his ability to embrace physicality would have been better than like what this roster has. It doesn't rescue you against Tennessee by any means.
Actually, yes. While I say that Dalton Connect would have gone for maybe 50 if EJ Jarvis had to guard him at 10, I'm also going to go and walk out boldly and bravely and say that Jonas Adu is getting like 6 points if EJ Jarvis is guarding him. Like, that is a good point that you pointed out. When the Gators have zero physicality inside, like, EJ Jarvis would have provided that. And I know he's like 6'7", or, you know, he's listed at 6'8".
Yeah.
I mean, he's handling himself infinitely better in the post.
Correct.
In all these matchups all year long than any of Florida's current guys. So, so he would have certainly provided value there. So, if people are looking for Dalton Connect stoppers, absolutely not. Jonas Adu stoppers, which again is unfortunate that needs to be discussed. He would have helped there. Just while we're talking interior defense, like, again, I do think that currently Alex Condon would be the most like, he's the most equipped to handle physicality. He's stood up the best, like, again, like there was times where Micah Hanlock did, and this has been multiple games where, like, I think Micah Hanlock needs to understand that guys, like, good post players are trying to score before they catch the ball. So again, like Jonas Adu, who's not even a good post scorer, but for the purposes of this conversation, a good post scorer, like, again, he was like sitting behind Hanlockton on the block. And as the ball got reversed into a position where it could be entered, then he stepped around and he didn't take much battle to get underneath the rim. So at the time he caught the ball, he could turn and score. And I think Hanlockton was thinking like, oh, well, you know, I'm staying and help. And once my guy starts posting me up, then I'll get physical, then I'll wall up. But it's like, no, like when you get buried under the rim, like it doesn't matter once the guy catches the ball.
Right.
So at least Condon, I think, understands that concept a little bit more of like, you like good post players are trying to score before they catch the ball. And he just like brings that physicality a little bit earlier. But it also has to be like mentioned too, just like, not that this is like fully in the category of like the post up defense we're talking about. Like Alex Condon, like guys have tried to punch it on him like 7 times this year. And he has like got some of the cleanest blocks you've ever seen every single time. There was 2 more against Kentucky. Like the shot blocking ability of Condon is incredible. Yeah, like
it's insane.
Like for guys, again, trying to punch it over his head. And he has like the cleanest blocks possible. Like oftentimes if someone blocks a dunk, it's one of those things where the ball gets jammed up at the top. You're like half curious if there was a foul, but like, you know, and whatever. It's like Condon is like just the way he's punching away these dunk attempts is absolutely incredible. We also have seen multiple chase down blocks from him. Like his shot blocking ability is incredible. And
oh, it's so good.
And yeah, I think for the, I don't know this as a fact, but against Tennessee in the second half, I was going to say, so this year's where I want to say for the first time, I don't actually know if anyone remembers, tweeted the show, but like it seemed for the first time all season, the Gators started the second half with a different group than the first half. As we know, the starters have been pretty locked in all season. Like obviously Pullen had a suspension, then Kugel went to the bench for a couple of, or has been on the bench, but like largely it's been the same starting group, and almost always it's been the same group starting the second that started the first. Against Tennessee in the second half, it was Alex Condon starting and it was Riley Kugel starting.
Yeah.
I don't really care. Like, again, it's cliches of it's not how you start.
Kentucky is the only other time that's happened, by the way.
Who started the second there?
Just Kugel.
Oh, gotcha. I gotcha. But yeah, this was, you know, 2 players mixed in, but like, yeah, it doesn't matter who starts. It's how you finish. Cliches such as that. But like, is there any conversation right now as to who Florida's best center is? Like, is there anyone right now who would say that Micah Hanlockton is better than Alex Condon? Micah Hanlockton's offensive rebounding is still like ridiculous. The numbers are outrageous. And Alex Condon is just really good on the offensive glass. Micah Hanlockton is just like ungodly. But like every other element has been Condon. I think the edge goes to Condon. So when we eventually get to talking about Missouri, I'm very interested to see if the starting group does change or what.
Yeah.
But you know, it's one of those things too, like where we could talk, well, like Hanlockton has started and continued to start, but like you look at the last week of games or 2 weeks of games, it's like second half minutes are essentially garbage time for Hanlockton. Like, yeah, he started, but it's usually like Florida starts the half. Their deficit stretches into a large deficit. Then Alex Condon comes in, plays the important minutes, and then Hanlockton's been doing mop-up duty. And Yeah, I just think that like, while it's not like Condon solves every problem, I still think he is struggling with the physicality a little bit, still struggles with help defense a little bit. Like, again, he's an incredible shot blocker. So like a lot of his help defense possessions look great. He's still getting pretty messed up when his guy goes to set a pin down and he hasn't been particularly good helping there. And again, we got to get our best guys out there and not play our, you know, rotation as it's, because there's certainly a big boost to be able to bring Condon off the bench. But yeah, I'm just starting to see when the problems are physicality. And it's, you know, again, not to get right to Missouri, but not that Missouri's really built to, they don't have particularly super talented post scorers, but yeah, I just wonder if we start to see changes, because at some point, I think you got to look at the 1-3 start and to the SEC after a non-conference that wasn't great. and say like, maybe just playing the same offense with the same players and the same defense with the same players is maybe not going to work. And maybe it's time to change something up. The easiest thing to do is start to change your rotations. Is that enough? Yeah. Probably not, but it's at least the easiest, most surface level thing you can do.
Yeah, I thought Florida did some, you know, they did change a few things. There was more Denzel Aberdeen in the second half. And I would note he had the second. Now, 7 minutes, how much can you really put into like his defensive box plus minus? But the fact that it was the second best of any Florida player on the floor in the game says something about him competing. I wish he didn't miss three layups, but like his physicality and willingness to attack, his willingness to set a hard screen, like these are encouraging things. From him from a development standpoint. And it was interesting that like the only, so like there's two schools of thought on Aberdeen right now. There's like the fan base, which is typically like, I don't like that he's out there because he can't make layups. Okay. And then there's like my DMs, which are usually like fans or coaches. And then it's coaches who are like, man, Denzel Aberdeen like is playing so much better. Or, oh man, I love the way Denzel Aberdeen guards. Or did you just see the screen he set on Zakai Ziegler? Like, you know, like just, I mean, these are all actual DMs I got. And I was like, you know, yeah, like, I mean, I think he's an improving player. I also don't know like that's the area where Florida needs to modify its rotations, right? Like, I think, and I want to talk about Arkansas because it's a good Walter Clayton segue. Like, I think there are flaws in Walt's game right now. And I think they get exploited a little bit, as we saw in the Virginia game. And in some other games where he was real turnover heavy. And I don't think he's as good a defender as I thought he was when he transferred over. Like, I thought he was going to be a pretty capable defender because he's so quick with his drives and kind of explosive in that sense. I thought, well, you know, maybe he'll be able to move laterally pretty well. Like, foolish stuff for me, foolish stuff, Eric. You know, wrong about Wal Clayton on the defensive side of the ball. And maybe that's a good time to kind of talk a little bit about the Arkansas game, because I thought Florida played super well on pretty much all fronts, with the maybe exception of Walt, who had 5 of Florida's 12 turnovers, who had his game, his every SEC game, well, every Power 6 game, really, like pick 6 for a dunk.
It's incredible.
He had an absolutely atrocious, the worst closeout I've seen a college player have this season live on Jeremiah Davenport. Which resulted in 3 free throws. So like his gap defense is not good, you know, and I say all that and like he scored a bunch, you know, so, okay. But I do think at some point, like Walt Clayton is a guy who has additional eligibility and has a bunch of things that he needs to improve. Like Florida needs him out there because he's a lovely scorer and his drives are beautiful and he can finish at the rim. And certainly when Florida did adjust offensively against Tennessee, not to merge the two games, but I think that it's a helpful point here, Eric. Florida attacked mismatches better in the second half and missed 18 layups, right? I mean, they're 11 of 29 on layups. And I think to Lee Humphrey's credit on the radio broadcast, I turned Dykes off. I was tired of him worshiping Tennessee. Like, I get it. They're really good. And Humphrey was like, you know, we made some adjustments, Sean. Unfortunately, our adjustments really are just to change our rotations and kind of attack mismatches immediately instead of the ball sticking. And we're missing layups. And I think Lee's kind of right, right? Like, I think it's a little more complicated than that, but like, he's kind of right. Florida missed 5 layups in the first half. They missed 13 in the second half. So this game could have been a little closer. I'm not saying Florida wins, but yeah, I mean, some of that was players other than Walt Clayton, who tends to make his layups but has other flaws. And we saw those flaws in an Arkansas game where Florida otherwise dominated.
Well, it's funny, and I feel bad starting this with a negative, but Riley Kugel had the big point total against Arkansas. He played well. He, of course, had the big embrace with Golden after he was subbed out at the end of the game when Florida had the huge lead, and then he hugged every, you know, staff member and tell right. My teammates were really happy to see it. Like Riley Kugel played really well. He also smoked a ton of layups again. And it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, like, and I just say that to say like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Riley Kugel's back. And like, hey, maybe he is, because that's just always what he's at. Even when he was good, he was smoking a ton of layups. And then what happens in Tennessee, he smokes a bunch more layups. And but it wasn't just him, and I don't put it just on him. But like, you know, he's got those, like, he misses wide open layups. He looks at the ref. He slaps his hands together. He looks up at the sky. And I do wonder, like, would a couple of players on Florida's roster start to do that? Like, I just wonder how much missing layups starts to become contagious. Kugel did have the big game against Arkansas, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, I mentioned, like, I keep pointing it out because it is truly it's incredible, like the Jameis Winston of it all, for Walter Clayton to put up these huge numbers offensively and be really good offensively, and then throw like the mind-blowing pick six every single game. Like, it's truly, like, as performance art, I respect it. But like, and it also says something that, like, I think he is so, like, I think he's been so good offensively that, like, I don't say I don't care, but I almost like, hey, if you're gonna be Florida's offensive engine and you throw one pick six a game, like, hey, Florida's still coming out ahead.
Sure.
You mentioned Walter Clayton's offensive game. Like, I was wrong on him. You know, people who've listened to this podcast know it'd be impossible for me to try to pull revisionist history. I thought it was a good get for Florida. I thought he was going to be a 10-point per game guy. I thought he was going to be just to catch a spot up shooter. That's where I was most wrong, is like, right. And even I was like, went to go back and look at his Iona numbers and what he did. Like, yeah, like he wasn't scoring like this at Iona, but in the way that, like, again, and I pointed it out on a Patreon video doing Walter Clayton film, but like, he is truly Florida's most talented scorer and the guy who understands, like, and I know, like, he is not Florida's most skilled scorer. He is not Florida, or actually I should maybe say he's not the most talented scorer. He is right. Florida. He is Florida's most skilled scorer, yes, because he's the only guy on the floor who knows how to catch a ball properly. And I mean that seriously. When the ball gets reversed to him, he knows how to catch with 2 feet on the ground so that he can jab either way. And he makes a decisive move. And he's the only, like, again, then you can just, like, imagine Rick Pitino working him out and going through those fundamentals of, like, making him catch the ball in the wing 100 times before he's even allowed to use a dribble, because you can see that there's other guys on the team that don't even know how to cleanly catch the ball in a way that they can attack to either direction or read the feet of a defender. So, like, again, I think against, like, a team like Arkansas, that's, like, pretty vanilla in just, like, their offense, pretty vanilla in their defense. And again, I'm not, like, that's kind of my read on the Arkansas experience. They, and again, I mentioned earlier that, like, hey, you don't need to run complex stuff if you run it really well and have really good players. That's been Arkansas. That's not Arkansas this year. So again, just to see these, like, kind of similar man or easy kind of man principles, and just have Walter Clayton catch on a ball reversal, catch really cleanly with 2 feet hitting the floor at the same time and reading the defender, attacking the closeout, and make, like, again, there was times that Walter Clayton looked like he was just on half speed. Like, it just, like he scored a bunch of points, like, driving the ball, like, not even looking like he broke a sweat, like, looked like, yeah, it was him and Rick Pitino and a bunch of cones. So yeah, I'm really impressed by Walter Clayton.
Yeah.
The turnovers are egregious, but, like, hey, I think you've got to live with it though. Like you said, I think defensively he's not tall. He's not long. He's fairly quick, but it's still just difficult to defend if you don't have those at a high level, if you don't have those. And again, I almost wonder, like, I almost think he's not as quick as we think he is. I think it's because his footwork is so good. Like, when we see him get by defenders on ball reversals, again, I think it's because his footwork is so good.
I think that's true too. Cause, like, he, you know, if he were, like, I think he looks explosive because his footwork is so good. But I also think back to him being, like, a 3-star football recruit with, like, decent size for a safety. And, like, he would have been playing probably D1 football if he were truly an explosive athlete.
Hey, I've kind of told some people this story privately, but, like, hey, believe me, I would have loved to have been the guy to write the story about, like, Walter Clayton, the possible football recruit. And, like, the Walter Clayton football story at Florida was, like, they thought he was a pretty good player. They brought him in for a camp. They realized he was not SEC level. And that was kind of the end of it. And again, I don't say that to like, hey, that's just to get to that point is pretty incredible as an athlete. But yeah, I truly, and I say this as a compliment to him, I think he's not as explosive as we think because he's just actually so skilled. And yeah. And then again, when I keep showing, talking about Riley Kugel, who is talented, but not skilled and doesn't understand how to catch the ball and in a position to score on the perimeter. I see Walter Clayton. I'm like this, like I love how this guy plays. The turnovers are, again, it's performance art, but it's the way he catches the ball in the wing as a off-ball scorer you don't see a lot of young players doing that. And like I want to think that it's, whether it's him, whether it's the Pino influence, I love watching Walter Clayton play. I don't even remember how we got to this, but I think we're talking about Riley Kugel actually to begin. And again, it was good to see that he was able to knock down shots. He had, as you know, catch it, jab step, sit behind a three, pull up. We saw a little bit of explosion, but it's one of those things. I actually pointed out that he missed layups again, not to be a jerk, but to point out that like this almost was a sustainable performance, because it's like Riley Kugel did the things, like the things that have kept Riley Kugel from being good this season. Some of the sloppiness, understanding when to score, some of the sloppiness off the catch, missing layups, like he did that and he still was able to be productive and put up points because we saw something Yuki mentioning, it's like, hey, when it's kind of like athlete on athlete matchups, that's where Kugel does really well. And that's kind of Arkansas, and Riley Kugel was better than a lot of those similar players on Arkansas.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you just made a great point. Like even when he misses the layups, like the fact that he's attacking the rim is enforces the issue. And it's one of the things he just was declining to do over and over a lot in the non-conference. And, you know, when you think about him getting going last year and having that run of double digit scoring games where he was so impactful, like every one of those games, almost all of them road games, by the way, at Miss State, at Arkansas, at Georgia, at Alabama. Like it all started with his just willingness to win athlete on athlete matchups and attack the basket. Like, you know, and that's how we were able to get a sample size where Eric can do a phenomenal Patreon video and be like, I'm not sure he can really finish, but I love that he can force the issue and then, you know, get to the foul line. So he did get going. And then, you know, obviously his defense has improved this year. We've talked about it a lot. And so he becomes Florida's highest defense box plus minus guy. He has a help block. He has a steal. He had a grown man offensive rebound that I think got the whole building going. You know, with three Arkansas players surrounding him, Florida's just a better team. Dalton Connect aside, with Riley Kugel on the floor to play defense. So, you know, we saw that in the Arkansas game. And, you know, I think that his energy obviously lifts the rest of the team up. And Tyrese Samuel had, you know, probably his best SEC game as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's just going to be huge for the Gators. We talked about in Tennessee, the front court was not an advantage when during non-conference play, there was Florida's front court was the biggest advantage. And I think a lot of people are like not putting Florida's struggles on Tyrese Samuel, but I think people understand that like, well, Florida's going to be any good. They need Tyrese Samuel to be good. And I think you look at a lot of matchups moving forward in the SEC. I'm fairly concerned with the center matchups. If Jonas Adu is going to be going off, like that's not a good sign for a lot of other players. But I look at a lot of matchups that are just really favorable to the four. Like again, most teams in the SEC have like 6'6", 6'7", like powerful, like power forwards. And then of course, like Noah Carter, again, Missouri is just the perfect example. Like Noah Carter, 6'6", 235 pounds, plays below the rim, doesn't have good length, not a good athlete. That's the guy who's probably going to play a lot of the four for Missouri, unless they change up their lineup. Or they've got 6'8", 205 pound Aiden Shaw, who's a good defensive player. But like, again, he's kind of like a tweener 3-4, like not particularly strong, but he's a good defender. I actually like him as a player, but like these are the, like that's Matt anyone who's guarding Tyree Samuel should have a good matchup against. And you can start to go up and down a lot of these SEC teams and be like, oh man, like, you know, center is going to be a little tough. Like, I don't think Alex Hahn and Mike Hamilton are going to get too much done. But like, then you look at the four and you're like, oh, either that's a 6'8", 200-pound guy that Tyree Samuel should be dominating physically, or it's a 6'6", 230-pound below the rim plugger. And Tyree Samuel should just like hit jump hooks over these guys. So like, I really just do think that if Florida is going to have success offensively moving forward, and they need to get something from the front court. And I'm not really looking at Micah Hanlockton and Alex Conan to provide all that much. So Tyree Samuel, it's like when Florida's at their best, he was arguably Florida's best player. He just has to be again. And I think again, to see, I guess, Arkansas, to see him just get back to, like, for lack of a better term, like the Tyree Samuel we saw early in the season, like where he was able to catch in the mid post one or two dribbles, get to again that jump hook and just casually finish over the top of a smaller defender. That was pretty huge. I think that I think the ultimate thermometer on Florida, and I've mentioned this, is like if you told me just Will Richards' stat lines, like you could honestly predict Florida's schedule. You could predict if they won or lost. Like, he had 6 points against Baylor, Florida loses. 3 points against Wake Forest, Florida loses. 17 against Michigan, Florida wins. 2 points against Kentucky, Florida loses. 5 against Ole Miss, and 8 against Tennessee, many of which came in the late half. Like, it's just like Will Richard is the ultimate thermometer. Like, he's just like, as he just goes as Florida goes. Maybe some of it's Florida goes as he goes. I think, again, like I talked about, it's like Will Richard is a guy who takes and makes open shots. So if Florida is getting them, he's putting up points. If they don't, he's not, and Florida's losing. So like, he's probably the ultimate thermometer guy, but I think the guy who might be the temperature setter a little bit more, the thermostat guy, if you will, would be Tyree Samuel. So yeah, I think that that was the encouraging thing about Arkansas, for sure. And yeah, again, it was, in this case, it was like, you know, a lot of Trevon Brazil or Chandler Lawson at the four, both guys who are, again, a little bit thinner guys that Tyree Samuel was able to overwhelm kind of physically.
Yeah, and he, you know, maybe he can do that again with Florida's trip to Missouri. Missouri really struggled against Trey Mitchell in the Kentucky game. They had a lot of problems with Georgia's front court, and, you know, gave up a bunch of points to those guys in the front court too. And then they kind of improved that actually in their last two games against South Carolina and Alabama. And it was bigger wings, which Florida doesn't really have any, that exploited them the most. Now, Alabama is probably the best offensive team in the country. Certainly one of them. We could say one of them, and then that's safe, I guess. look, they held Alabama to 55 points in 30 minutes. So that final score was deceptive. I watched a lot of that game. And the way they did it was really, really disrupting Alabama's ability to initiate their offense with ball pressure. And then just kind of the way that they didn't necessarily hedge, but they jumped and showed a lot. And, you know, I felt like they made ball reversals difficult after applying ball pressure. And I think that kind of slowed the game down. It was 68 possessions, which was Alabama's slowest game in 2 months. you know, like, if you told me they'd do all those things, I certainly wouldn't think that they would have lost by what they lost by. And, you know, really what happened was Alabama was plus 10 in second chance points because they dominated the glass. And Rylan Griffin, who's 6'6 and can be like a microwave, just went off. Like, he scored – how many points did he score? Hold on. Yeah, Alabama scored 38 points in the last 10 minutes of the game, Eric. And Rylan Griffin scored 21 of those. So they just kind of got single man dominated, and then they didn't get much offensively from Nick Honor or Sean East, who's been kind of like the guy for them offensively that can keep them in games. But I think formulaically, what I saw at Alabama is certainly capable of beating Florida at home.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to look at some of these defensive, like it's incredible that they were able to slow down Alabama, but just like overall the defense has been so poor. Just as people know, just the quick way to get a good glimpse at any team. Look at KenPom, Missouri 77th in adjusted offensive efficiency. They're 150th in defense. Last year they were 9th in offense and 180th in defense. So we saw, and a lot of these players are returning. So again, I was listening to a Field of 68 podcast the other day. They were talking about the most disappointing teams this year, and Missouri was on the list. And I don't think a lot of people realize it necessarily, but it's like, yeah, like this team is 104th in KenPom, and they return a bunch of guys from a team that won a game in the NCAA tournament. And to be honest, like, I think Missouri, and I say this in the most, like, I truly say this as a massive compliment. I thought they were massive frauds last year. Like, because they're 57th in KenPom. Every one of their metrics showed that they weren't good, but they were able to hold out and win close games against good teams. And like, they had a huge win over Tennessee where they, like, on the road, where they snuck it out. And, you know, they beat Illinois and they beat Iowa State. And then, like, they just didn't lose. They just didn't lose against bad teams. Like, I think the worst team they lost to last year was Florida in terms of KenPom. So, like, again, they were 57th in KenPom and were a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, I think that's impressive. Like, to me, I truly mean that as a compliment. Like, clearly, like, every metric shows that this team was not very good, but they, like, came in and clutched out in the biggest moments and got the absolute most out of their talent. They ended up losing to Princeton, who was 91st in KenPom, which, like, maybe says something about the fact that, like, oh yeah, this Missouri team wasn't as good as their seed suggested. But so they bring a lot of those guys back. And I think a lot of people were like, well, this was a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament that won a game. But I think we're starting to see that, like, oh, well, like, they probably weren't as good as people thought last year. And they did lose important players from last year, but they brought a lot of guys back. Like you mentioned, Sean East. And yeah, now they're 1-7 in their last 8. Lost to Georgia, lost to Kentucky, lost to South Carolina, lost to Alabama, as Neil went in depth about. They lost to Kansas, Seton Hall, and Illinois in a row, got into close conference play. Obviously losing to those teams is not,
they've, like, lost the last 7 games against Power 6 teams.
Yeah, and it's like, no one's going to fault you for losing to Kansas on the road, Seton Hall on a neutral or whatever it was, and Illinois on a neutral. But it's like, each of those games, you saw that they, like, played progressively worse. And, yeah, I just think that, I don't love the build of this team. Their backcourt of Sean East and Nick Honor, like, they can score, but, like, they're both, like, these, like, fire hydrant-y type guards that are, like, undersized, really thick and strong and can make shots. And again, those are good players, but it's like, those are two guys that are, like, if you want to look at why they're not very good defensively, you can start with the backcourt of those two guys. And then again, in the front court, there's Noah Carter, a player that Florida contacted in the portal that I wanted zero part of. People may remember that. Good, you know, decent offensive player, but yeah, he's just can't defend at an SEC level. Not athletic, not long. And then they brought in Connor Vanover, 7'5". You might remember him from Arkansas. One of those, like, well, it didn't work out at California, it didn't work out at Arkansas, it didn't work out at Oral Roberts, but maybe it'll work out for us. So they do have the 7'5" Connor Vanover, who does 7'5" things at times, but just like, he's nowhere near as mobile as Jamarian Sharp, who is, like, as good as it gets mobility wise for 7'5". So one stat I think is quite funny is, like, I mentioned Aiden Shaw earlier, 6'8" sophomore. He was, like, not a shot blocker last year. He had, like, 3 block shots in all of SEC play. This year, he is 13th in the country in block rate. And it's like, you could say, okay, did this player suddenly get to be, like, the best, like, the best shot blocker in the country overnight. And then you watch the film and it's just like Missouri gives up so much dribble penetration that Aiden and like, again, it's Aiden Shaw normally plays the four. Missouri's backcourt doesn't guard their centers. Whether it's Noah Carter or Connor Vanover can't guard in space. So they're just giving up so many drives at the rim and Aiden Shaw is the help defender. And he gets like 30 chances a game to try to like rotate over and get his fingertips on the ball. And he has the 13th best block rate in the country because of it. And again, Aiden Shaw's a good player, good defender. I do not think he is the 13th best shot blocker in the country, but like he just gets so many opportunities to block shots that he's putting up. So that just tells you everything about the Missouri defense. I did not watch the Alabama game, so I was enthralled at you talking about how they slowed down Alabama, because I don't even know how that could have happened. I mean, you just explained it, but like on the surface, if you said they slowed down Alabama, I wouldn't have known how they did it. So to be honest, and I know that, sorry, I'll just give my last thing.
Please. Like,
Missouri's also 327th in the country defensive rebounding. Like every part of this game, like, and again, like it's foolish to suggest that Florida should be heavily favored at any SEC game. Like the matchup doesn't get any better for the Gators than Missouri. I really do think the Gators are going to have a big win. And if they don't, like if you can't beat the Missouris on your schedule, that have no one to, like, Florida's strength is in their backcourt. These might be the two worst starting backcourt defenders in the country. Missouri's the worst defensive rebounding team in the country. They don't have the physicality that, like, Florida's big hole when it comes to physicality guarding post-ups. Missouri doesn't have anyone who's capable of, like, everything about this matchup, to me, you could tell me where I'm missing. Everything about this matchup seems favorable to the Gators. Like they have to win this game and it shouldn't be a nail biter. And even though it's, you know, on the road. Or sorry. Yeah, it's on the road.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more.
Looks like we just lost Neil for a moment. So we'll see if we can get him back here. But that's kind of my further, just this kind of my further points, and I actually did look at the schedule just as we try to get Neil back in here. I just wrote about a Gator Country. We talked about on the podcast the work of Ben Brandon, who pointed out that Florida has the easiest quality of competition in the SEC because of the unbalanced schedule. Like you could start to, like, if you want to say how does Florida turn the season around, you can look at it as like, okay, well, Florida takes care, like even with Florida's bad start to the season, they're still projected to go 9-9 in the league on KenPom. Is that good enough to get you in the NCAA tournament? No, not in my opinion. But you can start to see, like, well, if Florida wins the games they should and then like steal a game against Auburn at home or steal a game against Mississippi State at home, like you would start to see a picture where they're close. But like you have to win the games against the Missouris. So that's kind of where I'm at. Neil, we'll welcome you back in after your quick little drop out there.
Yeah, that was weird. I was going to say, it looks like they'll be without Caleb Grill, who was among the Big 12 leaders in steals for the last couple years too. Like a guy that, while not really like, you don't think of him as like a great defender per se, he's disruptive defensively. They don't even have him. And Florida has eaten teams that cannot defend straight line drives alive. You know, again, Florida should be able to do that in this game. Alabama, you know, Missouri kind of forced Alabama to play slower, and then Alabama took the bait and took a lot of threes, which they always do, but there were a lot of guarded threes because they were later in the shot clock because of ball pressure and because they sort of jumped and showed and just did things to slow them down. There wasn't any 1-3-1. Dennis Gates hasn't incorporated that yet. But yeah, I mean, to Eric's point, this Missouri team has beaten two Power Six opponents all year. Pittsburgh, who it appears is bad, as it turns out, they have beaten, and then Minnesota. That is it for Power Six wins. They've lost to Memphis, which again, there's no shame to the Power Six teams that they've necessarily lost to, with the exception of maybe the home loss to South Carolina in overtime, but not great. The one guy that I think will give Florida some problems, and he's given a lot of people problems. Let me back up. Two things. First, Nick Honor has not played well this season. He was much better against Kentucky. So, like, or against Alabama, rather. He had 18 points. He was 4 of 9 from three. He got fouled a lot, got to the free throw line. Like, if that gets him going and coming back home, certainly an opportunity that, you know, he gets back on the path that that helped them get to the NCAA tournament. But Nick Honor is not really a guy that really should scare Florida fans. He is a guy that can make open shots. Tamar Bates is really the only guy that I think can be problematic for Florida in this game. A lot of people probably know Tamar Bates as a kind of Riley Kugelish build wing who went to Indiana as a high level recruit. And he is top 10 in the SEC right now in KenPom offensive rating. He had 19 points on only 8 shots against Alabama, which is incredibly efficient. I would wonder why he's not taking more shots, I guess, if that is the case. He has 7 consecutive double-doubles. So he's really effective as a rebounder. And probably their most disruptive defender. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself on that. The one thing I think that Dennis Gates has said, hey, I wish you would do a little more, is drive the ball with aggression. He can be deferential at times. And, you know, if I were shooting 93% from the free throw line, like Tamar Bates, like, gosh, I would be driving the ball a lot more too. But he hasn't done that. So he's a guy, I think, certainly, sorry, I said 7 consecutive double doubles. I meant 7 consecutive games in double figures. Not 7 consecutive double doubles. He does have double doubles this year, but certainly not 7 in a row. Anyway, I think he's a guy that can put pressure on Florida, and certainly is a quality defender on a team that has a dearth of them.
Nick Honor is someone who's like kind of been a little bit of a not quite into like analytics darling territory, but he's always been an analytic favorite. From the start of his career as this at Fordham, where he has always been one of the best shooters off the dribble in the country. So like at Fordham, he just like didn't shoot a good percentage, but he shot like overall from three, but he shot like a ton of threes off the dribble. And then he like went and then like in kind of a Riley Kugelish way where like, I don't think people realize that like shooting off the dribble and shooting off the catch are like not really the same. So then he goes to Clemson and things don't like work out totally. And then he goes to Missouri and he's like kind of back on that, like on shooting a lot off the dribble situation. So it was really good last year, but I do think like, while overall his numbers are really good, it's like, you're going to go really hot and cold. So like on one hand, I could see like not really fearing Nick Honor, but also it's just like, he's got the like explosive ability where like, if he goes, you know, 4 for 7 on off the dribble threes, and each one of them is just an absolute backbreaker. Like, he's the guy who can do that, but he's also the guy who can go 0 for 7 and turn the ball over a ton and stuff like that. So it's like Noah Carter is going to have the ball in his hands a lot in the high post. They ran pretty traditional kind of Princeton stuff last year to really good effect. It went really well. Again, they're missing some of those athletes that could kind of just like were really big threats, turning back cuts into post ups or curling screens and catching with one dribble and finishing physical layups. So I do think their offense is better than 77th on KenPom, but I don't think it's any like, again, and you could say like, hey, the numbers are for real. I thought they were really good offensively last year. They were 9th in KenPom. It's hard for me to really think they were the 9th best team, but they're really, really, really good. So if they did give the Gators issues, it would be just that they find ways to score and against the Florida defense that hasn't been great. And they put Alex Connan and Thomas Houck and some of the younger players into these split actions that they're not particularly used to guarding, or just generally speaking, maybe they try to get Florida's front court players in off ball screening actions as much as possible. But again, I think Florida should score a whole lot. Like really, I don't think you could add, like, if you were to say what kind of things would make you feel good about a matchup for Florida right now, you'd be like, okay, well, like, you probably want pretty poor perimeter defenders on the backcourt because Florida needs their two guys to really score from out there. It's like, okay, well, that's Missouri. And you're like, oh, what's your biggest fear? It's like, well, Florida's getting hammered on the inside. They don't have much physicality. It's like, well, like, Missouri doesn't have that. And it's just like just everything points to a very favorable Florida matchup. And like, yeah, these are the ones that if Florida wants to stay in the mix for an NCAA term whatsoever, like this unquestionably have to beat this team.
Yeah, it won't be a quad one win for Florida based on the current status of the net. So that's not there for the taking. The Gators will still, if they leave with a dub, they'll leave with zero quad one wins on the season still. But they have to have it if they want to go to the NCAA tournament. I mean, the one thing you can say about the resume right now is that there aren't any bad losses. Like, you know, for all the Twitter uproar, Twitter is not real life. And the reality is, like, losing at Tennessee does very little to affect your NCAA tournament standing. Florida's pretty much still in that next four out area. And, you know, a couple of their wins are starting to look better, but a couple of Florida State being one, Richmond being another, a couple of their wins are starting to look worse. Pitt, I think is the best example of that right now. So, you know, the Gators kind of just need to take care of their own business, and hopefully they can do that because they'll get a huge test, although it's a quad two test, but still a nice resume building win opportunity lurks behind it with Miss State.
Yeah, I think I saw it was six remaining quad one games for the Gators this year. Of course, some of those are the ones that, like, not that you're particularly like expecting the Gators to win, but again, just like looking at how the schedule breaks favorably for the Gators, like they've got Missouri twice, which is great. They've got Vanderbilt twice, which, you know, should be wins, and not, again, not quad ones, but one thing that I think breaks fairly well for the Gators is they do have Auburn at home and Mississippi State at home. So those are the games you can kind of look at and steal. And maybe Florida only has one or two, like, you know, projected quad one wins left on the schedule, but you can get, one of those, hope something ages well and turns into a quad one. You steal one against Auburn at home. Maybe you steal one at Mississippi State. Like you can, like, the pieces are there. So, but yeah, it's just like, you can't let one slip against Mississippi State. Even if they were 50 spots higher in the net, I'd look at the way that their roster is constructed and say Florida needs to hammer this team. Even if they're 50 spots higher in KenPom, I'd say Florida needs to hammer this team just based on the matchups and style of play.
Florida should beat.
So yeah, I cautiously excited for this one.
Hey, you know, they have the one thing that Todd Golden has done at Florida is beat who he should beat. So if they just continue that trend, they'll be in good shape. I'm going to sign us off. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts.